Gosh. I was just gonna, actually, just more of a suggestion over, I mean, you said earlier about just certain areas of sleep, you know, where possibly people would be allowed to sleep, and I was just gonna suggest some of the broadening. I don't know if parks would be necessarily a bad thing, and also I think, like, some of the beaches. Right now, I don't think you can even be on the beaches past, like, 10 o'clock. For the most part.
Right, and of course the parks close at dusk, and the riverfront closes at dusk.
I mean, that's bizarre. That's Nazi, basically.
Police state's kind of stuff, I mean, because obviously...
It is, really.
You're criminalizing innocent behavior, and you're telling police officers to make these distinctions, you know.
And, I mean, it shows, I think, some of the real, just, you know, reactionary forces that are out there, and just how... The minute it's become a homeless phobia of sorts. So.
I'd like to get back to Laura Tucker's idea.
Okay.
Laura's here, by the way, and Laura, you should feel free to jump in if you want.
Well, I think that some of the...
Can you hear David?
Yeah, I can hear.
Hi.
Yeah.
I appreciate anybody that has any ideas as far as concrete proposals. I think one of the problems, though, that we're going to keep running up against again and again is that people are truly afraid of homeless people. They think that, for instance, one woman spoke to the city council and said that she was afraid that the chances of rape were going to go up if they made it legal to sleep. We're viewed as murderers, rapists, drug addicts, lunatics.
You know, I don't like even get discussing this, because I think you're talking about the viewpoints of self-interested businesses, paranoid people in the neighborhoods, or a couple of people who've had very bad experiences. Jillian Greenside, for instance, is the woman you're speaking of. You know, she's had some bad experiences with homeless people. She's entitled to review. She has done some very good work on other issues.
But you know what? They're also entitled to be educated.
I'm not interested in spending my time and my money and my energy educating a bunch of bigots. I think our real job is to make sure people get protected.
Well, I think the problem with taking over an area is that... you know, if you can afford to be arrested, if you can afford to do, a lot of people that are already living in very survivalistic means don't have the time or the energy or the money or can afford the hassle of doing that. And so
well, it's kind of ironic, you know, you say that I mean, it's ironically true that it's homeless people often who form the core of groups that were able to be arrested in the past, whereas those who are in houses, you know, trying to hold down two jobs and pay their rent, they're the ones who they say, well, we haven't got time for this either. So obviously, if nobody has time for it, then the issue really isn't worth much discussion at all. But I guess what I'm thinking is that really we need to do is start looking at coalitions. Mm-hmm. Where, for example, I'd like to see a bunch of students, 40 or 50 of them, assert,
yeah,
we're going to set up a campground on the campus, we're going to invite 50 members from the community, and maybe five homeless people. You know, this business of playing protector of the homeless, I find a little distasteful, although I understand where it comes from. You know, I think we could get a mass of people together who just, you know, yeah, they'll take the bus, just like the students are willing to take buses for ethnic studies programs, thank you very much, but they don't seem willing to take the, you know, I mean, we haven't yet tried to organize around the rights of people in their own community. I mean, it's preposterous.
Yeah.
Similarly, in the beach flats, we have a situation where Hispanic people are now again on the chopping block with this Dolphin Lee project, which is being proposed, where they're going to evict 200 people from the Dolphin and Lee apartments in order to put in an oh-so-much-better Mercy housing project on top of it that these people won't be able to afford, and they won't be given the kinds of fees they need to move to other places. Beach Flats residents might be willing to join with other residents and homeless people to, say, take over some of Canfield's property, which has been sitting around in grossly negligent, deteriorated, I mean, abandoned condition as Canfield waits for his latest boys on the city council to come through and give him another plum, you know. I think we need a coalition, maybe in one of those two areas.
I'd agree with that, Robert. I think you were talking about, it's interesting, the university climate earlier, and I would have to say, I think there's been a lot of movement, a positive movement on the students' part. I think if you were up, when I wrote my paper, I think you would have been hard pressed to find 10 or 15 people very versed on the sleeping ban about that issue. And I think now I would say that there's a lot more people, even a mainstream group like CalPERG, has taken a pretty strong stance, mm-hmm. I think, as far as, coming out against the camping ban and proposed like more like statewide legislation and kind of focusing our camping ban. But there has been, I think, a lot of motion. I think some kind of an action would be good, like, even People's Park, like that kind of a, you know what I mean, like a, some kind of a squat, because it really, like, you need that focal point, I think, to really, I'd agree, like, to really make a change. You'd have to have a focal point to really, you know, a place of struggle, a place of really, like, you know, where people can, like, come together as a community and, like, you know, do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. What do you think, Laura?
I agree, too. Actually, it's been many, many months waiting and hoping for city council to do something, and they haven't come up with anything. And
well, they do have the Homeless Issues Task Force, which is blossoming in full bloom here in the summer.
It's
easy for me to sound off and rant and rave about it, and I'm willing to support this stuff. I think really what we need to do is to be ready to take action. I know, for instance, we were called, the Homeless Services Center is much more friendly to homeless activists than it was under Karen Gillette. We have a new director down there, Ken Cole, who is putting pressure on the police department, who's reporting cases of homeless beatings, which Karen Gillette was not too good about doing when she was there. We have a situation where, there's been a proposal to occupy the police station, the new police station, when it opens up, not in terms of, changing the way the police department operates, but saying, look, there's no, and this is something we haven't discussed, there's no shelter for homeless people in the summer other than 28 floor spaces on churches that rotate, every night, and therefore this leaves most of the 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz out in the cold, or it's sometimes cold, usually it is pretty cold at night, but more important, or as important, because some people like to be outside, it makes them vulnerable to troll busters. And this is not to say we should set up an institutionalized campground. I have the same concerns, I think, that Laura has as far as that goes. But to have people in a position where they are afraid to report assaults and afraid to report what they've seen to the police department because they themselves are sleeping outside and are afraid of being ticketed as this individual who reported the shots on June 6th out at the Poganip said to me is really a scandalous and dangerous situation.
It's life-threatening.
It's life-threatening as well.
Yeah.
It's also, I think it disturbs the general peace of the community because people have to arm themselves in order to deal with these kinds of troll busters.
The only thing is, Robert, that I brought up because of the curfews on the beach and the parks and stuff is just to see how ordinarily people are affected. I think a lot of times people are like, oh, the homeless, those people. Whereas I know a lot of people who would like to be able to, have a fire on the beach every now and then, utilize public space, maybe sit in the park or maybe even sleep on the beach once in a while. I know people that camped out 5 miles north of town, they sweep the beaches, mm-hmm. At night. And, I mean, it seems ridiculous to kind of gone that far.
Well, it's not just ridiculous. It's clearly a cultural assault on a different lifestyle and an economic form of cleansing against another group of people.
Yeah.
And I think that what you're saying is very important along the lines of this coalition idea because we have thousands of people in town who rent, who are on the edge of homelessness, who hold down two jobs, probably meaningless jobs that they don't much like anyway, but they have to do in order to pay the outrageous speculative rents that are going up and up and up, and people are getting evicted big time.
Yeah.
I'm not just the only one that's getting evicted. I know Laura's being threatened with eviction. Other people are being threatened with eviction. It's all over town. Mm-hmm. If we can form a coalition that involves these people, then we have a fighting chance to turn this sort of fringe movement, if you will, in the eyes of some, into a really mainstream kind of thing. And I'm not saying we should make it palatable to the mainstream as some sort of, vanillaize it. I think we'd have to radicalize the mainstream here. That's what I think. So there. Anyway, I'd love to be able to babble, but what do you think? You're here for the summer. Are you still going to be in the community next fall? You're going to take up the cudgels for this and get pilloried? And what's your plan?
Oh, who are you talking to?
You.
Oh, me. Oh, okay.
That caller.
Oh yeah. I'm planning to be here in the summertime and go away a little bit at the end of the summer. But yeah, I'm here. I'm actually living here in the flats. the moment.
Beach
so,
Flats, wow.
Yeah.
So you can do, we have a student Beach Flats homeless renters coalition that will sweep corruption out on its ear.
Yeah, they, I mean, the Beach Flats, I went to a meeting about a month and a half ago, and it's really interesting to see that issue, too, with the, all the empty places sitting around waiting to be bulldozed, basically, for the, you know, the upscale places to come in. But, yeah, I'm willing to step forward. I'm helping right now with getting an info shop going.
You want to talk a little bit about that, or
which? What's that?
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's just going to be like basically a place where a lot more activist organizations can meet, distribute literature, just a place of being able to come together. So yeah, I'm just helping get that going. We're hitting a little bit of a snag as far as like, you know, we got a space, and then it looked like the person was starting to have a little cold feet about having the organizations meet there and congregating and stuff. But hopefully it's going to move forward. It's a really, you know, seems like a good bunch of people. And
is there a number of people can call if they want to help with this effort?
Oh, gosh. I don't really have a number right now.
If you have any, if anyone has any interest, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll pass the word on to you, Doug, if you call me back.
Okay. That sounds good.
All right.
All right, keep up. Good work.
Hey, thank you, Doug.
Okay. All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Well, what do you think, Tough Love Tucker? Any prospects this summer for activity? When is your first meeting planned of this homeless issues task force?
Well, that's the first frustration. I don't quite understand what happens when all of the city council members don't appoint people. I've been told different things. I guess the Citizens Police Review Board went through this process. And it drug out for quite a long time.
By the way, we do have an open phone line for those of you who want to call in and talk with Laura Tucker or with me, or with both of us, actually, in fact, with the entire community, since this does go out to thousands of people, 427-3772. Well, Laura, what about just meeting? What about just declaring you're on the task force and you've decided to hold open office hours and you invite everyone to come because you think there's a particular issue that needs to be talked about right now, and you admit that this isn't, you know, perhaps the most official meeting, but it's one that you are announcing publicly in order to stir up the interest of the folks in houses who need to be educated, if you will.
Well, you know, what we could do is just not call it the hope. We could say to become the homeless issues.
The pre-homeless issues task force meeting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pre-homeless.
You could call yourself People Against Prejudice, PAP. Are people against prejudice and poltroonery? That's a fancy word for cowardice. Poltroonery.
Uh-huh.
Poltroon is a coward. I'm thinking, you know, I mean, really, I would love to see someone who is now in an official position, even if you weren't doing it
that's
specifically
so
from your official position to
but,
take.
Okay, well, sure, that's good advice. And
I mean, I know that you're an extremely busy person, and I know that you...
Yeah, it's really hard with Gabriel. I have no babysitter.
Perhaps you can advertise. So. If we have any babysitters out there who want to help poor Tough Love Tucker...
Yeah, come have tea and watch my baby.
Come have tea.
Yeah,
indeed.
We'll talk.
So
I think that's a really good idea, Robert.
So if people want to throw a meeting, should they give you a call?
Oh, sure.
You want to give out your number on the air?
It's real difficult to get me at home, so I'll give two numbers.
Sure.
459-0837 is at home.
459-0837.
Good luck there, but you never know. And then voicemail is always open, 457-9754, which is the Community Action Board voicemail, which anybody can get that doesn't have a phone that's homeless. That's
mm-hmm.
a real good
and
thing
get,
to
I
know
have.
And should get. 457-9754. And then from there, I'm voice extension 208. My last name is Tucker, so there's a whole way to find people. Once you dial the first number, if you know somebody's got a box, then you can enter the last
and
few
And if you
numbers.
Forget any of these numbers, yeah. just call
CAB.
The ever-loving 423-HUFF. 423-4833.
Sure. That too.
And I will point you in the direction of Laura Tucker's numbers because I know them by
yeah.
heart.
So 457-9754, extension 208, and I'm sure my housemates would just love it if we had a meeting at my house. Oh, by the way, I'm not being evicted. I'm not in any... legally, I have not been asked to leave. So it's just my housemates who wish that I was not there, but they at this point don't have any.
Well, perhaps they'll become more broad-minded when they see the kind of clientele that comes to the house.
Oh, I'm sure that that will open their minds considerably.
Yes. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we're looking for some clientele from you out there at 96.3 FM. Come on, all you police officers who listen to this show. Show some courage. Give a call in. You don't have to announce who you are. You can even muffle your voice if you want like that. And tell us what's happening with the police out there. Do you like enforcing these sleeping ban laws? Do you find yourself enforcing them less? We continue to hear that people are being harassed under these laws, though ticketing, I admit it, it seems to be down. This show is reportedly a favorite of some police officers, and I really...
Really?
Yes. I want to invite these officers not to feel excluded from the show.
I would like to know, too, if you see a fellow officer behaving incorrectly, do you feel comfortable reporting it or saying anything to anybody? Or
Give us your view.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I think... You don't
I'm get scared of the... I'm really scared of the cops in Santa Cruz.
Are you? Why is that?
Sure. Loved Happy John. I really loved him. And they shot him twice in the abdomen for... he was a very harmless person. And this is how I feel. He had that plastic gun with him for weeks before they shot him. The police were aware of it. They could have de-escalated the situation very easily. Many, many days before they chose to kill him.
Happy John Dine was a friend of mine.
Yeah, Dine was killed in November of 1997, and one still hears people at City Council talking about this issue. I believe Jim Costner spoke about the issue at the last City Council meeting.
And this man who was shot several times after being in a fight with his wife or girlfriend, which I don't know his name, but that was scary to hear about. I'm especially concerned with what happened recently. I saw Becky showed me the videotape of this woman holding her child and having her arm twisted back and screaming, "He's hurting me," as the child screaming, "Mommy, Mommy, Mommy." And to me, that's especially troubling because I don't go to a lot of protests because I have a young child and am afraid of being charged with child endangerment or some other reason why they might try and take him away. I'm very insecure about losing him. When I was homeless, I didn't want people to know that I was pregnant. It feels like really walking on thin ice when you don't have a lot of financial support, you don't have a home, and you have a little infant newborn to take care of. So I think that parents have a right to protest like anybody else, and everybody has a right to not be afraid of the police that's supposed to be protecting them. And I have friends that I wake up in the morning and wonder if they made it through the night because they're sleeping outside, and I don't know whether they're going to get beat up in the middle of the night by a troll buster or, quite frankly, a cop or a ranger. So I'm afraid of the cops in Santa Cruz. I'm sure I'm the only one.
You know, maybe that's an issue that you need to not just bring up and discuss, but again, I'm looking, I guess, for action on this issue.
I know, I'm action, but I, yeah. I'm busy.
Police are happy. Sadness, tears, you do.
I wish you would play that again. I didn't get to hear it. I was talking through the whole thing.
That was the ballad of Happy John Dine, as I call it, or Happy, as the author of the song calls it. Yeah, I can play that again. I think it's worth playing. I'm going to have to rewind it, and I will do that. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it looks like we actually are getting another caller. Boy, you are a devoted audience. I want to commend you right now. Hi there. You're on Free Radio?
Yeah, I'm Robert.
Now run that by me again, caller.
Well, I will, because I think it's very important that we all understand the way that the system in the United States of America in 1999, generally speaking, is set up. And that is that law enforcement is never wrong. even when they're wrong, they're not wrong. They're immune for what they do, they're immune for what they don't do, they're immune for what they say. And it is extremely rare that you'll ever find a law enforcement official, be they a DA or a cop, a police officer, who actually is forced into resignation over abuse of power. It's extremely rare. The situation in New York City with the guy with the broomstick, that took 2 years to surface. 2 years.
And
we are naive to think that these things are scattered. They don't happen in Santa Cruz, because they do. I think what might be nice to bring up would be we lack models and methods of how to allow these things to rise to the surface and be dealt with effectively.
Well, you know, it's interesting, in caller, in New York City, until the people by the hundreds, almost by the thousands, began to be arrested in nonviolent civil disobedient demonstrations, Mayor Einreich Giuliani was prepared to let this vicious assault just go by the boards and cover it up.
Well, it's, in my opinion, what used to be done with terrorism is presently done with materialism. And I'm not saying these things are bad. The basic consumer package of house, car, money to raise a family, all that stuff, retirement, these are good things. But when we, out of our fear of rocking the boat because we're afraid of the outcome that it might affect us, we look the other way at the obvious, blatant abuses of power, then we have literally thrown the baby out with the bathwater. I want to throw one thing in here. I wish Laura the best on the task force and all the rest of the players there.
Thank you.
You bet. In my opinion, if you're forthright and diplomatic, you'll garner the most distance.
Well, I'm learning. You know, I've never been very diplomatic, so but I'm trying.
But abuse of power is by far and beyond the most important issue of our time. If we cannot find ways to deal with this kind of stuff, then it's all nonsense. In regards to the Happy John situation, if we can recall the combat stance rhetoric within 15 hours or less, I'm not sure now what it was all combat stance, and there was a summary judgment. I think what could be said in that would be very difficult to argue with, dispute, would be that proper police procedures were not followed. They walked right up to Mr. Dine. They must have not felt threatened by him if they walked right up to him. Martin Over says, hi, Happy.
Yeah.
Now, we're all human beings and we all make mistakes, but the wrong approach is summary judgment and on to the next puff piece.
Unfortunately, true enough, caller, and though I have to say that I don't think this would justify by any means disrupting any public meetings on this issue. I would.
Well, Robert, you and I agree. You see,
you wouldn't want to disrupt the business as usual,
Robert,
right?
But once again, I come back to we lack models. We lack models of how to raise these issues in substantial enough ways where they're credible, how to attract credible support.
Right.
And we also lack ways of how to realistically deal with the fact that, seeing as how law enforcement officials are human beings, that they're going to make errors.
Mm.
And not only are they going to make errors, but with that enormous amount of power, they're going to be those rogue elements that abuse power.
Well,
and the sad thing is that I think most police officers are very, very honorable. And it's a disgrace to all the honorable individuals in law enforcement that these rogue elements persist.
I almost agree with that. I feel like, just from a very limited view that I got from working in an alarm company, now these aren't cops, but a lot of them are future cops.
You're talking First Alarm, right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, I feel like the rogue element is a little bit more populated than I don't know, I think that you might be being a little diplomatic.
The longer we look the other way, the more that we can expect that to grow.
Right. Like,
and hence, that's where we're at, Laura.
When you talk about the incident in New York, now I don't know too much about that, but I was listening over the radio about a week ago, and they were proposing actually doing away with the whole department and having the some federal branch come in and take over until they hired all new people, because they felt like that there was more than just a few bad apples.
Well, of course.
And I think that's true everywhere.
You bet. And it's only when there is an outrageous scandal. And as I said, this took 2 years.
Yeah.
And what it was the guy had a broomstick rammed up his rectum.
And he almost died from lack of medical
attention. And for 2 years, there was the code of silence, blue wall, denial. It didn't happen. You're crazy.
Right.
Slick lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, but the scandal became so significant that they couldn't just blow it off.
Right, and the reason it became significant, Bob, was because hundreds of people went to jail to make it clear and evident to the public, finally involving people who are so high profile that it became embarrassing for everybody involved,
and they had to try these people.
If my news reading is correct, they were doing civil disobedience in a very, very polite, diplomatic way.
Well, that may be. Right. That may be.
All right. And, what that did is it brought up the numbers. I would hope that... What's that? I couldn't hear that in the background.
Laura's trying to fish in troubled waters.
Absolutely, here. 100% against pieing. And I brought all the way over here to debate with Robert about it, but it was just a tape. You guys were not live on the air, unfortunately.
I have a pie here for Laura. Give me the pie.
Let me just say one last thing. It is an utter shame and scandal, and I'm going to use the track record of now judge, but formerly D.A.R. Danner, the documented scandalous track record going back to 1987 that hasn't been dealt with. Is an absolute scandal.
Uh-huh,
and you know these things don't happen in a vacuum, and we ought to all be ashamed of ourselves.
Really?
Well, thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much.
He's a judge now.
Laura, good luck.
Thanks, Bob.
You bet.
And this is still from Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Here's that song you requested about that man that you still remember, Laura, and he might have appreciated a good pie, too.
I'm sure he would.
Happy John Vine was a friend of mine, lived here by the sea. Down on the streets of Santa Cruz, he always laughed at me. Happy and I went to church one night, thank God, and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money, give me a fake dollar bill. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where's Happy? Shot down today. And it's yes, the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Happy was as harmless as a butterfly. Loved everyone he met. He never left the 60s. Didn't really care for the internet. One day he was grooving to some tunes, doing the happy bop, when a bullet entered his chest, came from a Santa Cruz cop. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? He's gone away. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. The people like Happy, I do believe. Heaven is great, great spirits. You know, like whatever you got here, less of, you got more there. Could happen. So I think he's up there. I think he's looking down. And he's probably saying, hey man, right on. I know you. Power to the people. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say, yeah, I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say.
The Ballad of Happy John Dine, as I call it. Let's get rid of the echo. Actually, it's Happy by Randy Hale. Here's a story from Los Angeles. Sun files $50 million wrongful death suit against the LAPD by Lewin Lotta. The son of a homeless woman shot and killed when she allegedly threatened two LAPD officers with a screwdriver filed a $50 million wrongful death claim against the city on Tuesday. It was about a week or two ago, actually. Attorney Leo Terrell filed the claim on behalf of Richard Mitchell, 34, the only son of Martha Laverne Mitchell, 54. Mrs. Mitchell was killed May 21st when, according to police, she refused to obey officers' orders to drop a screwdriver. The shooting is under investigation by police, the Civilian Police Commission, the FBI, and the U.S. Attorney's Office. The city has 45 days in which to reject or settle the claim. If the city does not respond to the claim, Mitchell can file a lawsuit against the city. LAPD Chief Bernard Parks declined comment, said Commander David Kalish, adding that it is department policy not to comment on litigation. The city attorney's office declined comment, said spokesman Mike Qualls, who said he had not seen the claim. The claim seeks money because the police department violated Mitchell's civil rights due to his loss of parenthood, Terrell said. The unnecessary use of deadly force by the officers under color of law made the killing a wrongful death, the lawyer said. He also said that for 20 to 35 minutes, Mrs. Mitchell encountered pain and suffering as she lay bleeding on the sidewalk on La Brea Avenue. Terrell also is seeking to have bicycle patrol officers Edward Larrigan, 27, and Kathy Clark, 29, fired from the police department. Larrigan was the one who fired the fatal shot, the only gunshot during the shooting. The police chief has denied accusations that the shooting was racially motivated. Mrs. Mitchell was black. One officer is Hispanic and the other is Asian American and Hispanic. Furor over the shooting follows a deadly police-involved shooting in Riverside. Tisha Miller, a 19-year-old black woman, was shot and killed December 28, 1998, by four white Riverside Police Department officers. The shooting of Ms. Miller also prompted complaints of excessive force and racial discrimination. Actually, there's a lot more in that story. And there's another shooting in Chicago. The shootings are coming thick and fast, but the police officers are still on duty. Turning to Philadelphia, sidewalk law sweeps many under the rug. As outreach coordinator for the Philadelphia Committee to End Homelessness, much as I would like to believe the sidewalk ordinance has helped reduce the number of homeless persons in Center City, editorial June 11th, I know that if anything, it has increased. It's a letter by Solomon E. Jones to a Philadelphia newspaper. The Outreach Coordination Center recently found that 2,200 people slept on Philadelphia's streets during a six-month period. Another census found 320 people sleeping on Center City streets during a single night in May. To say only 46 homeless people are in Center City is wrong. As wrong as a system in which 1,500 homeless people are barred from shelter under poorly designed rules. As wrong as the building code violations ignored by the Department of Licenses and Inspections because most shelters could not pass inspection. As wrong as a system that underserves the 90% of the street homeless who are male substance abusers. Philadelphia's homeless problem can be corrected not with lies, but with proper implementation of laws like the sidewalk ordinance combining law enforcement with social services. No one has been arrested because the police have an official move them along policy. Sounds a little like Santa Cruz. The $5.6 million in sidewalk ordinance funding has expanded existing programs, but just two new facilities with a total of 40 beds have been completed, and those beds are full. If we want homelessness to end, we must implement innovative programs, enforce existing laws, and constructively address unemployment and drug use. Solomon E. Jones, Philadelphia, June 16th. I don't entirely agree with that letter, but check it out. Let's turn now to Jacksonville Beach. And that is, here's a story from the, I think it's the Jacksonville Times, Florida Times Union. Dozens of residents who are fed up with problems with homeless people in the area broke into applause Monday night as the city council unanimously supported an ordinance that prohibits sleeping at night on the beach and in other public places. The ordinance requires a second reading before it will become law. The next reading is scheduled for the July 6th council meeting in Florida. The measure prohibits sleeping, camping, or storing property on the beach or at parks, on streets, sidewalks, or parking lots. They're expected now, of course, to levitate. Sleeping or lying on the bench or other public places is prohibited between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. Santa Cruz's sleeping ban, I remind you, is 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m., so ours is worse. Violators will be charged with a misdemeanor, but of course ours is an infraction, so it's better in one sense, but you don't get a jury trial or a public defender, worse in another, and you can't use effectively the necessity defense. City officials have been researching and drafting the ordinance for several months, but it couldn't arrive soon enough for many residents and business people who are annoyed by the sight of panhandlers and homeless people urinating in public, sleeping in public places, or acting rowdy. I'm really happy about this thing, said Councilman Mitch Kinsey about the ordinance. I'm happy that we finally got something that has teeth in it. In addition, the council overwhelmingly approved $23,000 to extend the Community Response Team, a seven-member police unit that, among other things, responds to complaints about aggressive panhandling and transients committing lewd acts in public. The police unit began as a pilot program about 3 months ago. Over time, beach residents, business owners, and some city council members have urged police to be more aggressive in handling transients. Police Chief Bruce A. Thomason said his department receives 10 to 20 complaints about transients each month. Jeffrey McBride, who lives in the 1200 block of North 16th Street, said he is tired of Jacksonville Beach's growing reputation as the place where all the bums live. They have no connection to the community and no stake in our safety, he said. His father, Ronald McBride, director of the Seawind Condominium Association on South 1st Street, said he's tired of the transients' belligerence and disregard for warnings. Many of these are strong-bodied young men who have decided that work is not to their liking, he said. But Miami Kemp urged the council to be more compassionate. She said the city should work to address the causes of homelessness, not just ban transients from public places. It's only by the grace of God that it's not one of us, Kemp said. How would we feel if it were one of our family members? Kemp was the lone advocate for the homeless Monday night. Richard Knight referred to the transients as vermin who would go away once the city removed their food and bedding. As long as we feed them and house them, they'll stay here, he said. Knight was referring to agencies like Mission House on Schetter Avenue that provides meals, showers, and other daytime services for homeless people. Jan Flagger, executive director of Mission House, did not speak during the meeting, but later he was astounded by the level of viciousness displayed by some of those who spoke. He said they must not be aware or even care that many homeless people have mental illness or drug addictions. To say everyone is trash is abhorrent, Flagger said. They weren't even counted as human beings, and that's tragic. Sounds like what's being done on both sides in Yugoslavia. Sounds like how Santa Cruz homeless are really treated at the bottom line, in spite of the gestures that are made in terms of investigations of these beatings by the police department. I think if the city council were concerned about this, they would have acted. I think if Tim Fitzmaurice had an ounce of compassion in his body on this issue, he would have returned phone calls on the issue of an emergency safe zone when I called him, 6 days ago after I got the report of this shooting. Maybe they're just too busy with the budget. I don't know. I know that we can't waste our time worrying about the city council, that we have to act independently of them, and we have to do things like form coalitions that essentially reclaim public spaces, that reclaim basic human rights, that reassert people's rights to defend themselves, reassert people's rights to live their lives even if they're poor. And I guess I'm curious to know how you feel in the last 10 minutes of Bathrobe's Beer's Broadsides. That's the show you're listening to on Free Radio Santa Cruz. 96.3 FM, that's where we're at. Calling number 427-3772. Again, continuing the Florida situation. And we were talking about Jacksonville Beach. Huh. Actually, there's a call. Let's talk after this.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Ray, Ray Glockreich.
Ah, listening to the show, are you, eh?
Yes, you. I confess.
Uh-oh. Well, I was afraid of that.
I was curious, maybe you've already covered it in one of your other shows that I missed, but have you discussed yet the killing and the subsequent lawsuit from the good cops of Danuba, California?
I have not. Maybe you can brief us on that.
Well, it's a fairly common situation with one very colorful twist that actually ties in to a parallel to the Yugoslavian War. The situation where the police break in and insist that they have the right to search this place, and they, for some strange reason, which I'll indicate in a moment, the occupants are startled and they don't recognize that all these people are really just trying to enforce the law. And so before the whole thing ends, the police kill the father in front of the wife and in front of the children, etc. And
where did this happen?
What? Dinuba, California. D-I-N-U-B-A, in case you want to start a boycott.
Where is it?
I saw it on Highway 99 as I was traveling there on the weekend, but I don't remember how far south it is. Probably Kern County or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sort of south central California.
Yeah. And of course, a lot of these cases get caught up in the niceties of whether or not the police had probable cause or didn't have probable cause. Apparently what they thought was that one of the sons of this family had been the source of a gun that had been used in a gang killing, and that was their reason for their search. And so there was just a little wrinkle in this particular case that brought it out of those niceties. It turns out that these particular cops not only went in there in plain clothes, but they all wore hoods over their faces when doing this search.
Hmm.
You know, I don't know what...
Maybe they were trying to prevent contamination with the lower element.
Whatever. At any rate, I want to tie that in to the obvious thing about, in terms of how I react as a newspaper reader when I heard that the various paramilitary and police forces in Yugoslavia were wearing hoods when they were attacking civilians, allegedly, in Kosovo. And because I personally, and I realize this is disputed, but I personally gave credence to that particular report, the fact that they were wearing hoods, for me, took away all color or claim of legitimacy, or that they thought they were somehow acting in the right, or that they were acting in some kind of military or police necessity. That, to me, indicated in the Ku Klux Klan tradition that they knew that they were committing grievous atrocities.
Well, you know, we had a similar situation here in Santa Cruz, although not with police who are doing this, but with apparently youths who invaded the place where Joe Barker and two other homeless men were sleeping in May, shouting, "Police, get up." Some of them, I believe, had hoods on. These were youths, and then began beating homeless people with pipes and chains.
Seriously, I did not know about that, but I would just say that the use of hoods is, to me, and I'm sure to many people, just an obvious signal that this is complete lawlessness gone amok, and of the worst sort. And it's one of the reasons why, in terms of the annals of American outlawry, the Ku Klux Klan has been deemed to be among the worst of our criminal institutions, probably in a way that's far more despised, and rightfully so, than even things like the mafia, etc. And it's incredible that a police force in California would actually adopt such a policy, and it wasn't done, obviously. This is not a single bad apple that's doing it. This is a whole, you know, organized search party that is donning the hoods. And the reaction of the city attorney or the city officials in Dinuba, after being after they were assessed quite a large judgment, is that this is unfair to the people of Dinuba to make them pay for this police error. This is not in the category of error. This is not a matter of the constable blundering. This is in the category of organized atrocity.
Organized crime, masquerading as law enforcement.
Well, even worse than, I would say even worse than crime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using the word atrocity to designate a species of crime that is far more despicable than much of ordinary, even much of ordinary violent crime. And it was organized by the police. I'm happy to report that the, although I don't remember the figure, that the particular judgment that was awarded by the jury, at least, what the judge will do with it, I don't know, but at least by the jury, was the largest judgment against police brutality of any American court in American history.
Wow. When was this?
I
expect a full report at my next show. Right?
I think it was last February or March of this year. Probably March, because I just recently read a newspaper, and that's about how far behind I am in my newspaper reading.
This is a historic moment. I think this is the first time you've ever called into this talk show, Ray.
Yes, it is.
And I hope your calls become...
See, I told you I was behind on the news, and I just found out.
I hope your calls become more frequent, because I know that you've had a 20-year history of... You were around when the Code Blue was happening, when police officers in Santa Cruz were beating up homeless people sort of in an organized way back in the late 70s?
Right. You know, I want to comment a lot about that, because one of your callers, Bob, I didn't hear his last name.
Bob LaMonica, yeah.
Oh, Bob LaMonica, yes.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, glad to hear from him, glad to hear who he was now, that he was... See, I don't remember exact words, but he was the comment was made either by you or by him that when we don't stand up to police brutality, even if it may start as a relatively rare thing, to the degree that we passively allow it to continue, mm-hmm. it ceases to be rare. It then becomes sanctioned.
I believe it was Bob who said that. Yeah.
Right. It becomes sanctioned. It becomes common.
Mm-hmm.
And so that. Granted, even in the best of run police forces, you're going to have occasional incidents of an isolated cop. It's getting out of line. And it's the duty of the police administration and the duty of their colleagues to go ahead and say, hey, wait, this guy is out of line, and he or she either needs to be retrained or they're not susceptible to that to get screened out. This is unacceptable. It's when the blue silence or the blue code.
I think Laura Tucker wants to interrupt you with a comment on this issue. Laura, what did you want to say to our guest Ray?
Left my sunglasses.
She came in to pick up her sunglasses.
Okay. Now she wants to see the dark side of things, so we'll let her go out of the sunglasses. Hi, Laura. Good to hear you.
Well, listen, Ray.
I just want to make the comment about how it was stopped in Santa Cruz at one point. It subsequently resumed.
Huh?
One of the police officers, Nick, forgetting his last name at the moment, spoke up and finally couldn't take it any longer, and he said, I need to say what we have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the pronoun was terribly, terribly important. He didn't say what he or she or they have been doing. He spoke up about what we have been doing, and he acknowledged that he had been among the perpetrators.
And we're talking, of course, about the police practice of...
This
saying,
is about 1979, 1980,
saying code blue on the radio as a code for come and beat up some homeless people.
Okay, then I was, excuse me, I was using it for in the wrong way. I was using it to mean that of the of cops just covering up for each other.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the...
I've got a question for you while we're on the subject, Ray. I know we got to roll because our time
okay.
is up. But very, very quickly, do you remember Michael Rodkin in those days? He takes a lot of credit for reining in police misconduct. Do you remember that happening? I wasn't around intensively during that time, and I wondered, as a person who was present, was Councilmember Rodkin high profile in denouncing police misconduct and so forth?
I honestly don't remember one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
But I... will assume that Mike Rodkin deserves a lot more credit during the early part of his career than he does for the later part of his career.
Not necessarily true. He voted in favor of the sleeping ban in 1979. Thank you, Ray. We got to run. I hope next time we can catch you for a longer discussion.
Okay.
It's always productive talking to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
And that is it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides tonight. I want to thank my guest, Laura Tucker, for coming in and braving my endless blah, 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 and the insults of different... Actually, she's got a lot of support from people who called in on the phone. So she did... And I hope she has all kinds of fine and positive things to report of the Homeless Issues Task Force. I know that all kinds of wonderful things are in store for that task force. And if you want to get involved with it or get involved with her or... tell her to get off the shitter and start doing something, it's 423-HUFF. Give a call to 423-HUFF. I'll put you in touch with her phone numbers, and you all can spar it out. Thanks for being with us. Tune in on Sunday, 11 o'clock. We're going to return. Another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides will come barreling at you. Let's go out on this song, and stay tuned for, I think, the recorded version of Uncle Dennis's... never mind.
Guest host.
I'm sorry. We have the usurping guest host, the vicious Phil Free. He will talk to you more about that after this song by Peter Yarrow rolls its way into your ears.
Piece of toast, a blow dry on air.
can't you see?
The way that we were meant to be. Our sisters and brothers are dying every day.
Santa Cruz, my name is Phil Free, and I'm sitting in for Uncle Dennis, who's out in the woods having a good time without us. All we're gonna do is be pirates while he's gone. I got news, views of environmental nature coming at you. Special thanks to Brooke from the Earth First Biodiversity Task Force for supplying absolutely all of my information here. Dennis, left town and left me all the socially acceptable Earth First music to do on the show, and no news, but thanks to Brooke, we've got some news. Let's see, we got a local event happening, Arbophilia Costa Rica Benefit Concert, Sunday, July 18th, I think it's 18th, 7 p.m. at Patagonia, 415 River Street, in Santa Cruz, with folk singer, activist, David Rovix. I'm sure I have some David Rovix here to play. Sliding scale donations at the door. For more information, call the hotline, or 662-3915. Once again, Saturday, July 18th, looks like 7 p.m. Patagonia, 415 River Street. Activist David Rovix playing number 662-3915, or you can call the Earth First hotline at 425-3205. My first story. Home Depot update, shareholders meeting at headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. Let's see, this person writes, hello, here's a quick addition to all the great news we're hearing around the country and up in Canada on the Home Depot campaign. The short summary is that we did an ethical shoplifting action at the Home Depot store here in Atlanta on Tuesday and worked on a shareholders resolution while having a major confrontation with Home Depot at its annual general meeting on Wednesday. Here's some details. Tuesday's action, we worked in a partnership with Quatsinas and Peter, representatives of the Nooksalk Nation in British Columbia. The traditional territory of the Nooksalk has been riddled with destructive clear cuts for over the past several years without the permission of the tribe's hereditary chiefs. The traditional leaders of the Nooksalk, we have found that much of the wood that is taken from the Nooksalk land ends up in the U.S. at stores like Home Depot. Our plan was to take this wood, which had been stolen from the Nooksalk territory, take it out of Home Depot's busiest store, bring it to the FBI, and demand that they launch an investigation into Home Depot's use of stolen property, all the while showing Home Depot that its continued sales of old-growth wood has devastating human as well as ecological consequences. We sent Kelly Quirk and Jen Krill, RAND's executive director, an old growth field campaigner into Home Depot wearing a long white lab coat emblazoned with RAND's Don't Buy Old Growth logo and Old Growth Inspection Team on the back. They were able to take the wood from the shelves and bring it outside to Quatsinas, who told reporters from USA Today, NPR, and the Atlanta Journal and Constitution how Home Depot was contributing to old growth forest destruction in Nooksauk territory and on indigenous lands around the world. Police presence was intense, so we weren't able to go much further with that wood, but we had a backup stash nearby, which we proceeded to deliver to the local FBI bureau. Clearly confused, the FBI agent promised to look into the issue and see, quote, what he could do. End quote. All in all, it was a great action. Home Depot was obviously peeved at being embarrassed on its home turf, and the message certainly was clear about the real human cause of selling old growth wood. Wednesday's shareholder meeting. Next day was Home Depot's annual shareholders meeting, originally announced to be open to the public, not even restricted to the company stockholders. We were there not only to draw more attention to Home Depot's egregious wood supply, but also to show support for resolution from HD stockholders, which mandated that Home Depot identify the source of all its wood and produce a plan to phase out wood from primary forests. Upon arriving at the meeting, we found that the Nooksauk and their allies were not welcome. Despite the fact that the meeting was open and that the old growth issue was on the agenda, and that Peter and the Quatsinas each had legal proxies granting them legal right to represent specific